Welcome to Movie Crush, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Movie Crush. I'm looking at one of my favorite smiling faces, Miss Annie Reis.
Hi, Chuck. It's been a minute. I'm so happy to be here.
I know. You know, I was looking, I know the last time you were in was with Holly for Empire, but I don't know when the last Annie solo show was. It was a while ago.
It was a while ago.
Could it have been Captain America?
I think it was, I think it was. It might have been What We Do in the Shadows, but I think it was Captain America. Yeah. Oh, it was Thor Ragnarok. Ha.
Did we do Thor Ragnarok?
Yes, we did. Of course. How could you forget my thoughts, my brilliant thoughts on Thor Ragnarok?
No, I remember that they were so brilliant. They blew my mind. Yes. And I just can't even think anymore about it.
Yeah.
I think that was the last one. That was a long time ago, Annie.
I know.
How you doing?
I'm good. I'm at the usual, I don't know why every time we record these, I'm at a weird intersection of very hyper and very tired, which I guess okay. Is great. But right. As of today, I am fully vaccinated. So that's exciting.
Oh, nice. So yeah. 2 weeks out or just got your shot?
2 weeks out. So today.
Which one did you get?
I got Moderna.
You're like, I got two Johnson & Johnsons. I just wanted to double up. I got Moderna too.
Yeah?
Team Moderna.
Yes. I don't know. Most people I know got Pfizer. So, yeah.
Yeah, same. Who knows? All I know is it has brought me a lot of peace of mind. I recorded yesterday with Josh and Jerry in person.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
Which was really great. We're all three in a room together. And boy, it was nice. I got to tell you.
It was
something else.
Yeah. I'm going to the office today. And I actually have something for you that I'm going to drop off at your desk.
Ooh. Yes. All right. Because I'm going to be there tomorrow. So.
Oh,
that's exciting.
Yes. Yes.
Don't tell me.
No, no way.
Oh, no. You're like, it's bed bugs.
Yes. That's definitely something I would do.
Well, it's great to see you. Great to have you back. We were talking about what movie to do. You threw out Alien among a couple of others, and I was like, what am I saving Alien for? If not Annie, let's do it. I did Aliens already.
Oh, okay. Well, you're in for a wild ride. I'm going to tell you that.
All right. Well, I'll go ahead and just start real quick by giving you my rundown of my history here. This is a movie I remember from when it came out, believe it or not, when I was 8 years old. It seemed like the scariest movie ever made for an eight-year-old kid. Mm-hmm. When you're looking at that poster and that tagline, one of the all-time greats.
Yes.
And I was not allowed to watch it. I read the Mad Magazine spoof. And weirdly, I remember all of that so vividly, but I don't remember the first time I saw it.
Really?
Which kind of, I think, speaks to a kid's imagination. I don't remember the first time I saw it, but I just know it's always been a movie of gone back to again and again, and then watching the 40th anniversary 4K edition last night.
Yeah.
It's saying it holds up is a cliche. It's just as great as ever. I can't believe this movie was made in 1979 every time I look at it. And it's one of the great all-time films.
Absolutely. Over on Stuff I'm Never Told You, we have a segment called Feminist Movie Friday. And for the movie that I was like, we have to do this segment was this one.
Yeah.
And it just years I've been like, we have to talk about Alien. And when the 40th anniversary, which was 2019, happened, I got to go see it in theaters. Oh. And it was awesome. It was so fantastic. And I actually have a really funny story about this movie because I vividly remember the first time I saw it. My older brother and I had a really adversarial relationship growing up.
How much older is he?
He's 4 years older than me.
Okay.
So I was 9 years old, and around the time, it was the Roswell alien autopsy thing happened.
Oh, okay.
And he showed it to me.
Yeah.
And it freaked me out, Chuck. It really freaked me out.
Uh-huh.
And being an older brother, he played this very epic well done but terrible prank where he basically convinced me that her parents had been abducted by aliens, that they were coming for me. And oh, no. Like, they were special effects. There were lights. I hid in my closet all night.
Wow. Well, you're in your closet again, so.
Yeah, it's all come full circle.
Full circle.
But because of the success of his prank, I was terrified of aliens. So scared. I couldn't watch E.T. I couldn't watch Independence Day.
Wow.
Like, I had a legitimate, if I remember once in class in high school, one of their teachers showed, I think it was Independence Day. I had to leave. I couldn't watch it.
So was that your big, was that your boogeyman?
Yes. And so,
wow.
And you know, I love horror movies.
Yeah, totally.
And it was like this thing that was just bothering me that I was missing this whole genre, this whole mm-hmm. section of horror movies. And so I told my best friend, I'm like, this is my Mount Everest. I have got to get over it. And I was in college and we watched Alien. And I cried. I cried. And I was like hugging her and hiding. But I got over the, I did get over the fear. And now it's one of my favorite movies.
Oh, wow. Well, there's something to be said for, what's it called? Exposure therapy?
Yeah. Yeah. I watched that and Aliens and Event Horizon all on the same day. So I.
Event Horizon was pretty good, I remember. I haven't seen it in a while, but that was pretty creepy.
It's messed up. It's messed up. But yeah,
my deal with Aliens is I like it a lot, but I really like seeing, I really like Alien a lot more, like a lot more. I like seeing, it's much more rewarding to see the journey for Ripley in this movie.
Yeah.
I love seeing badass Ripley all ready to go in Aliens,
mm-hmm.
but seeing the transformation here in her character arc is just, it's everything, you know?
Yeah, I think they're just two very different. I feel like Aliens is much more an action movie, which is still fun and great. But this 100%. One is like, I mean, immediately with the credit sequence of how the letters come in and the kind of driving beat of the music, you're like, oh, I'm unsettled.
Score.
I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know that it's there's, you know, it's a sci-fi horror film, but even having seen it so many times last night, it hit me of how much of a horror film this is. Like this, if this were a cabin in the woods, it literally you could just do everything you do and then make it a monster in the woods with the same people who maybe they're working in a coal mine or something,
mm-hmm.
and they're having dinner at their table in the cabin, like, and they get picked off one by one, and there's a cat that's fucking things up. I mean, it's a straight up horror movie.
Absolutely, and it's funny because I managed to miss that big Twitter kerfuffle about that article that said there's no horror movies in space. And people were like,
what?
Alien.
Who said that?
I don't remember. I missed it. But I saw like all of the fallout of people saying, here's multiple examples.
Sure. Event Horizon was kind of a horror movie, wasn't
absolutely.
It?
It's horrible. We don't need eyes to see. That's God.
I don't remember that, but I don't like that line.
Sam Neill. Oh.
Yeah, he was great.
Perfect. It was Xenomorph Alien Day a couple days ago, so this is sort of timely.
You know, I saw that somewhere today when I was poking around the internet about this movie. What was, oh, no, maybe Noel told me, but what was there a reference to this date, like in The Terminator or something?
Oh, I have no idea.
Or did they just pick, I mean, surely it wasn't out of thin air, right?
No, it can't be out of thin air. I think it's the, actually, you know what it is? It's the ship. The ship that they find is 426.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm all about the nerds claiming a day for their own. I'm all about it.
You know, in the process of being on this show, Chuck, I've made a lot of lists of like,
oh, sure.
Here's my favorite horror movies. Here's my favorite whatever. And I did notice, like, a lot of my favorite movies come from this time period, which I think is really interesting. But my dad is probably the reason I love movies. And this was, like, his youth and heyday. And he told me the story of taking my mom on a date to see Alien.
Oh, wow.
And he said it just scared the hell out of them. They couldn't even look at the poster. And people, according to him, people were, like, screaming and somebody threw up. It was, like, this really...
Well, I mean, it's hard for the youth today, Annie, which I will still include you, to understand that there was nothing like this at the time. Like, there was Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and those were sort of lovable aliens in a way. There was The Day the Earth Stood Still. There were laser beam shooting, you know, War of the Worlds type aliens. But there hadn't been, like, once H.R. Giger got on the scene and created this truly terrifying, remorseless, empathyless beast, no one knew what the fuck would, how to take this. It was truly horrifying, and like just rewrote movies, and this kind of movie at least.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting because there's a lot of things that were happening when this came out and before it came out that really influenced it. And, you know, some of the creators, like Dan O'Bannon in specific, said, like, I want this to be, because Star Wars had come out and it was really successful.
Yeah,
like, take that, make that scary, make it like Jaws in space, make it Texas Chainsaw Massacre in space. And also at the time, which I'm going to get into this, and I think some people are going to be like, wow, I never look at this movie the same again. But there were things like Roe v. Wade, and you had second wave feminism, and you had a lot of fears around like environmental things and chemicals and pesticides and foods. And then you had this fear around like capitalism and not putting employees first and like just not valuing them. So all of these things.
Yeah, we need to talk about the bonus.
I love that. That's one of the things that does feel very kind of Star Wars to me, where the ship is kind of dirty. They're just like people were doing their job and they just want their bonus. And then these forces are conspiring against them and not valuing them at all. And perfect organism, almost all of you are dead.
Well, I mean, it is important to remember when you see this movie to remind yourself that these aren't soldiers. These are blue-collar workers of the time on these operations where they're going to these far-off places and they're mining for, I mean, I know the serious alien nerds are going to be mad because I don't know exactly what they were doing, but they were mining for valuable things to bring back. And that's why that bonus scene is kind of funny, because you're right, it's like, they're there to do a job and they just want to get home. They don't want to go check out that beacon.
Nope.
At all. RIP Yaphet Kotto, by the way, who just recently passed. It was kind of sad seeing he and Harry Dean Stanton, some of those two shots, because they both left us now. And I thought, and I was like, oh, and Tom Skerritt. And Tom Skerritt's alive. That's the great news. He's 87 years old. He's still going. I was like, oh, that's great. Because Tom Skerritt is so emblematic of that time period, is like this sort of, he wasn't a huge movie star, and I don't think he really top-lined movies as like the big leading man, but he was super handsome and just this rugged sort of 70s guy.
Yeah. My dad kind of looks like him, actually, when he was that.
Oh, really?
During that period, yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
That's the scariest part to me, is when Dallas is in the, like, Vince, and he has the flamethrower, and it's like coming.
Oh my god.
Yeah,
well, because you've got, he employs, Ridley Scott employs so many great little tricks to ratchet up the tension. Like, this movie is a masterclass on tension building in a film.
Yeah.
And slow burn kind of filmmaking, and he uses little things like that boop 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 boop.
Yes.
Boop boop. And you just hear that sound, and like, I just got a little chill right now. and seeing that little, you know, 1970s era, wasn't even a special effect, just looked like a Pong game.
Yeah.
You know, just getting closer. It doesn't need to be fancy and look like some, you know, amazing CGI creation. That's just, it's a good lesson, I think, is you just need a green dot getting closer to the other green dot at a rapid rate. And it starts going faster and faster. And you're terrified.
Yeah. And I think that was something really smart that they did. And in general, I think is the best course of action in horror movies, is they knew, like, if we show this alien in its full form too long, people are going to be like, that's a man in a suit.
Yeah.
So you really, I think it's less than 2 minutes you see the full creature in the whole film. So
yeah.
It's just like,
it's the Jaws effect.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it works so well. Like, your imagination, If you've done the job as creators, your imagination of the audience is going to do a lot of that work for you. Like,
Yeah. And I think it's, I mean, that kind of restraint is so valuable to a filmmaker. And I think that's, I don't know about lost, but it doesn't get used as much as it should these days. But it the very, very end, when it's blasted off from the rear of the ship, is kind of the final reveal of what that whole body looks like. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing it and going, it has arms and legs. Like, I guess you knew it had arms because that great shot where it reaches out for Tom Skerritt. But I don't think I even thought about it having big, long, gangly legs until I saw it outside the ship.
Yeah, it feels much more, because so many of the shots are kind of it unfurling.
Yeah, yeah.
And so almost reptilian, maybe, or mm-hmm. like you're not picturing that part. You're so horrified by just this unfurling effect that it's never even, at least for me, it didn't really occur to me. I guess legs,
Yeah. The great Veronica Cartwright as Lambert. I do one impression of her, and that is this.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Yeah.
That's my Lambert. She was so good, though. The cast in this movie is unbelievable. John Hurt, like I said, Yaphet Kotto, of course, Sigourney Weaver, the great Ian Holm, who was just light. I mean, I forgot about that end scene where he's totally skitzing out, throwing himself against the wall in like full android robot freakout mode. And I'm like, that's Ian Holm doing that.
Yeah, every time I watch this movie, which is at least once a year, I'd say, he makes me so angry. Like, I still am like, oh, I don't like this guy. I do not like
him.
I
know. Yeah, it was brilliant casting, and the reveal of him as so late in the movie as is he an android or a robot? I mean,
android.
He calls him a robot, but Parker does, but it's so well played to hang on to that for so long. And of course, once you've seen it a bunch of times, you see a couple of little hints along the way, like Dallas says early on, which I don't think I ever even noticed. He's something about something, this man, and Ian Holm kind of gives him a little look.
Yeah.
And I don't think I ever noticed that until last night. I was like, oh, there's a nice little Easter egg.
There are a bunch of little things if you're paying attention. Like, I think he never eats. Like, you never see him eat. Like, he sips on the, like, milk thing, but other than that, you don't see
him. His future sweat?
Oh, gross.
Yeah, it was really nasty, because it wasn't even full milk, it was watery milk.
Yeah, yeah, it's like a step below.
That scene, I posted the, that scene's so brutal, when Parker literally knocks his head off, and then Ripley, you know, sets him up on the table with his head separated from his body. And I just had to send that picture out on my movie screen to the movie crushers. I was like, look what I'm watching for Annie. And everyone was really excited that you were the one for this movie.
Wait till I get into my quotes.
Let's hear one.
Ooh, okay. So from Tom Schoen at Slate.
Okay.
Okay. Alien has issues. It has mommy issues and sex issues. It has a thing for strong women who it also likes to ogle in their undies. It's a hot mess, a Freudian fever dream with its crabby and post-coital atmosphere, its rebirthing imagery, its queasily gynecological production design, its night sweat of male anxiety, a particularly horrifying confusion of the sexual gynecology within the gastrointestinal, and the famous John Hurt birth scene in which a razor-toothed phallic monster gnaws its way through his stomach into the light, a kind of science fiction phallus dentatus.
Oh, God.
You know, and
that's,
I know,
true.
Lambert, Veronica Cartwright, she didn't know, like, the actors didn't know during that scene there was going to be, like, that explosion.
I heard that. That's brilliant to do as a filmmaker. But, yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, it certainly did occur to me last night, like, mother is the computer. The alien itself, obviously, is a big mama who just only wants to, you know, have babies and kill people. So, yeah, there's a lot more going on below the surface. And it's a movie that I love that this is a movie you can pick apart like that. And who knows what Ridley Scott and the writers intended, but who cares, really? It's like it's a movie that you can interpret in a variety of ways.
Well, I do know Dan O'Bannon, who is one of the writers, there's a lot of like conflicting kind of controversy around the writing of this movie.
Right.
And who got credit. But Dan O'Bannon is largely the one that gets the credit. Mm-hmm. And he said, he is quoted saying, "One thing that people are all disturbed about is sex. I said, that's how I'm going to attack the audience. I'm going to attack them sexually. And I'm not going to go after the women in the audience. I'm going to attack the men. I'm going to put in every image I can think of to make the men in the audience cross their legs. Homosexual, oral rape, birth, the thing lays its eggs down your throat, the whole number."
Oh, wow.
I've got so many quotes, Chuck.
So he that was very much intentional then. That's pretty cool.
Yes, it absolutely was intentional.
Although there is the one scene with the alien's tail kind of creeping up Cartwright's legs, right?
Yes, and that's a big... it's never been confirmed what happened in that, but she's not wearing... When you see her again and her body is hanging, she's not wearing pants. And I have played the game Alien Isolation, which is, I think it's Ripley's daughter goes back and investigates the ship. And it's implied that she was raped in that.
Really?
Yeah.
Ew.
I'm telling you, so much to unpack.
There's a lot to unpack. Non-thematically speaking, just the look of the film, obviously I mentioned H.R. Giger, who, and I don't know if it's still there. He had a bar in Europe somewhere that was styled out like this. And a friend of mine went, and I don't know if it's still there. This is many, many years ago. And I remember him telling me all about the Giger bar and how amazing it was. But, you know, you always sort of remember the dank darkness of the guts of the ship. But so much of the other stuff is so cool looking. The striking white of the quarters and the control room and stuff like that. And I think it's, I didn't remember that stuff looking so kind of sharp, and that maybe that 4K just, it popped really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole design of the movie is just legendary. It still looks amazing.
Absolutely. And there are some things I love about when they were coming up with this idea, because Giger was inspired by this German artist who did something. It was kind of based on the Furies, the Greek Furies, called Francis Bacon. If you can look it up and you can see, like, oh yeah, I see the inspiration. But then from that, he did a collection of pieces called Necromonicon, and that's how he came on the radar of Dan O'Bannon and Ridley Scott. But he was going for something sexual and creepy. And some of his designs were so overtly sexual, the studio was like, nope, nope, which blows my mind because they're so sexual.
Yeah.
And U.S. Customs held Giger after seeing his artwork for Alien, and they were highly disturbed by it. And I think Ridley Scott had to go help him out. And then, like, the first version of the egg just had one slit in it for the opening, and Ridley Scott laughed out loud when he saw it, because he's like, that looks like a vulva. That's like way too much.
Can we have it open at four corners, please?
Yes.
I mean, that's one of the great shots of the movie, you know, is that slow peel away of that egg. And especially, you know, it's hard to kind of go back and remember when you didn't know what was coming.
Right.
Even though it's still, I mean, I was like biting my nails last night. I know everything that happens in this movie, and it's still tense to me. But it is hard to go back and sort of remember the beauty of the first time you see this movie and not knowing what's going to happen, and just how fucked up the chest burster and that thing on its face, on his face, and the acid blood. Like, there were so many little brilliant moves. Just giving it acid blood.
Yeah.
It was like, all right, well, now what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You're going to destroy your ship by, like, cutting this thing up?
It was genius, and that's why they did it, is they were like, well, what's a way we could make it logical, make it make sense that you wouldn't just shoot it or, like, have these other things?
Yeah, imagine that's what everyone said at first, is, well, why don't they just kill it?
Right.
It's like, well, it has acid blood.
That does feel kind of, like, when you say it that way, it feels kind of childish. Like,
a kid said, like a kid just literally made it up.
Yeah, exactly.
That's something Ruby would say. Because I have acid blood, Dan.
Just got me.
Another thing I thought was really cool was how, and I never really noticed, was how, I mean, the whole movie is a slow burn, but how slowly he brings Ripley along.
Yes.
And how that whole first act, really, I think she has less screen time than anyone and barely any dialogue.
Yeah, you would not know she is the main character for, I think, the first third.
Yeah.
And then even after that, there's like a transition period where you're not sure, which that is another thing, again, hard to like recapture, especially for me, because I saw it so late, but I did know like Sigourney Weaver, Ripley,
right,
main character. So it's hard for me to kind of imagine that. Like, but the first time I saw it, I was like, wait, where? I thought she was the one that does all the stuff, but I was kind of confused.
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about her arc. You know, it is a slow transformation. I think it happens in stages almost. Like losing Dallas was one of the real big transitions for her, I think.
Yeah. And I know I've talked about Final Girls on here before, but she's one of the original Final Girls.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's interesting that she starts and she's just like everybody else, is this blue collar sort of worker in the background, but she is kind of the one voicing concerns or confronting Ash, the android.
Mm-hmm.
And she's the one that's like, no, we need to quarantine. This is how we do. These are the rules. I'm in charge. And she's ignored.
And she never, it's weird. I couldn't remember last night when she was saying, even to Dallas, her boss, like, no, this isn't, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. I was like, wait a minute. Does she give in? And I forgot she never does. It's Ash.
Yeah. Yeah. That guy gets me so angry.
I know. That motherfucker. Never trust an android.
Never trust. Well, you know what makes me really sad about Aliens is then you're like, oh, trust an android. And then in the third one, it's like, actually, he was a traitor. I'm like, okay.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I guess that whole lesson is tossed out the airlock. But yeah. Then
but by the end, of course, Ripley is, I mean, when it's down to the final three, I mean, she is fully in charge. I don't know how, if there was rank because they weren't army or anything like that, or if she just stepped up. But she has that fucking plan together.
Yeah. There's definitely rank involved, but I also feel like even if there hadn't been,
right,
at that point, she was the one that had the plan. Here's how we're going to do it. And I love, this really could have gone the other way and not worked, but I love the whole sequence where she sees the alien, goes back and tries to cancel the self-destruct.
Yeah.
Like she's thinking on her feet. She's trying to find a way to survive and kind of reversing these plans. And then Mother, of course, foils it.
Oh, Mother. And it's just Ripley more than any, she's almost Terminator like in that she never ever gives up.
Yeah.
Like I keep, even after I've seen this movie 100 times, I kept waiting for her to just be like, fuck it, like I'm gonna off myself or just succumb to this thing. And she just won't do it, and without any, like, it doesn't even, you know, it doesn't set up some schmaltzy reason why, like this husband I have to get back to or any dumb trope that you might usually see. It's just this will and strength. It's pretty amazing and certainly was not a thing in movies in 1979.
Right. And famously, that role, Ripley, was originally meant for a man, but then they decided, let's make it.
I knew that.
Yeah, it was meant for a man. And then they decided, let's make it gender new, like anybody can audition. And they were really impressed with Sigourney Weaver. But I think, and the dialogue was written for a man, which I think is really interesting because they didn't change any. I mean, they probably changed some things, but not really. So,
so when she says fuck you to Harry Dean Stanton and Parker.
Yeah.
I mean, that totally makes sense now.
Yeah. So, and I think that totally, it worked. And I personally believe that that is a good way to write a character where pretty much, you know, any gender could play them. Especially in this sense, for something like this. I because there's no part of me through it that was like, I feel, this doesn't work, or like a woman can't do this, or this doesn't, like, it just, no, she did you're so well.
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing unconvincing about anything Ripley does.
Mm-hmm.
It's so grounded for such a, you know, crazy sci-fi horror movie. It's still so grounded. Nothing that happens in this movie doesn't feel unrealistic or something she couldn't have really done. Because, you know, it's not like a bunch of hand-to-hand combat or any weird, like, fight scenes. It's all just super grounded.
Yeah. And I think this character had a lasting legacy. And I've read essays about how she, like, toughened up future heroines. And that whole scene where, very disturbing scene, where Ash tries to kill her, and it's very, like, oral rape evocative. He's trying to shove the magazine down her throat. If you look behind her, there's all this, like, pornographic imagery.
Yeah.
And I feel like Ash was this toxic masculinity. Like, he's pretty much spewing sperm at the end.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Yeah. And it's just, like, this frustration of women. I even read essays that said, like, women are turning down giving birth, and people, men were mad about it. And so, like, having that scene of, like, this toxic, basically toxic masculinity walking, trying to do that to her, and then...
It's definitely a weird way to kill someone.
Yeah.
You know, let me roll up a magazine and jam it in her mouth.
Yeah.
I don't even know what that would do. Would that just keep her from breathing? Was he choking her?
Yeah, I think so. And I imagine he's got, like, android strength, so...
Sure.
Who knows?
He's throwing her around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Annie, you're bringing the goods. I didn't...
Oh, I got so much. I got so many thoughts.
It's all so obvious, though, now that you point it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, a lot of people, a lot of critics have written about how this is, again, with Roe v. Wade and second wave feminism...
Mm-hmm.
It was like a fear that men were having around, like, this male pregnancy. What if I had to take care of children?
Right.
What would I do? And just the what if I basically the pregnancy being like, oh my gosh, I might have to actually take care of a child. And then, like, the whole idea of the face hugger, where it's inserting its embryo against your will and you can't take it off. Unless you'll die. And it's that whole idea of, like, you have to carry the child unless there's, you know, even if it'll kill you,
right,
at the health of the mother. All of these things, Chuck.
Holy shit. yeah, I mean, I'm never going to look at this movie the same way again.
Oh, so last night, I almost texted you, but I was like, I don't think this is a work-appropriate text. But I was like, please look for the sexual imagery.
So you're just
going
to tell me about it?
Please look for the sexual imagery in this movie. You cannot unsee it.
Yeah, that's work appropriate. I mean, this is what we do on this show, you know.
I debated, but like, maybe I'll just wait.
Well, it was very funny. You about 10 minutes after I started, just for the listeners, Annie texted me and said, well, I guess I have to watch Alien again for research for the gazillionth time.
Yes.
I was happy to see it again.
Yeah.
And it is a movie I do come back to. One of the striking visual images for me is, and it was such a smart way to light the scene, but were those spacesuits with the light on top.
Yeah.
Kind of cast the flashlight on top of the bubble helmet, kind of casting down on their faces. Mm-hmm. And it's not a great, like, if you think about it realistically, it's probably not a great system to have all that light in your face.
Right.
But it sure looks good on a movie screen, especially those long shots where you just see these sort of three orbs kind of moving around. In that dank darkness, headed toward the space jockey.
The space jockey. Oh, yeah. that whole sequence looks amazing. Like the fog, the dark, like sharp corners of everything.
Oh, it looks so good.
Yeah. And not to keep hammering this home, but Veronica Cartwright, she said it was basically, that scene was like we were walking around penises and vaginas, and it's meant to... Mm-hmm. Resemble like a womb, like space is the womb and then that is a womb and they're like the colonists entering, like it looks like a vulva, so they enter, they're like the sperm, and then, you know, poor John Hurt falls down into this kind of like you can almost feel like the atmosphere of it, of being warm and sticky, and then the egg comes for him.
I know. I mean, it's all certainly there. I don't think any of this is reading anything into it that wasn't, you know, the sandbox that they were playing in. And I think that's the stuff that does make it sort of subconsciously more unsettling.
Yeah.
You know, than just your sort of standard horror sci-fi film.
Right. In my line of work, sometimes I think maybe you're reading too much into this. But for this movie, I definitely have the quotes to back up that I am not.
Well, I mean, I think that's kind of a bunch of bullshit anyway. Like, I think reading too much into something is just another way of saying thinking really deeply about another perspective about something.
Right.
And, you know, maybe it goes nowhere sometimes, but that doesn't mean it's not doesn't have value.
Yeah, especially if it's resonating for you and there's got to be some reason that you're, because I mean, that's one of the beauties right. of entertainment in general is you're bringing yourself to it and interacting with it in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can also hear some asshole just saying, oh, you're reading too much into it.
Right.
Just look at the surface.
It's just a very phallically shaped alien with a phallically shaped tongue. I don't right. know what your problem is.
It's all over the place.
Also, they used KY jelly for that like effect. And the skin was made of condoms.
Oh, was it really? When he picked up the shedded skin?
Yeah.
Yeah, it did look very condom-like, mm-hmm. actually. Oh, man, it's all over the place.
It is.
here's the quote. I just love this. And it's such a great sort of minimalist script. But when they finally get to the space jockey and Dallas is reporting back, and I just like, I see this, it's so simple, but so effective writing. He says, alien life form, looks like it's been dead a long time, fossilized. Looks like it's growing out of the chair. Bones are bent outward like he exploded from inside.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not much there word count wise, but mm-hmm. boy, is that like sort of hair raising stuff, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, immediately right there, the hairs in the back of your neck are prickling because like looks like something burst from inside his chest. And then it kind of cuts sort of quickly. Like Dallas is still a little worried and they're like, no, let's keep going. And you're like, maybe don't keep going.
Yeah. And the space jockey is also, and that's what some people call him. If you're listening and you've seen the movie and you're like, who the fuck is the space jockey? Mm-hmm. Also known as the pilot. I think it's the huge former pilot of this ship that's still, you know, part of this chair now. And it's one of those things where, like, I had to actually look up online and I never thought to do it because you can never really tell what's going on there.
Right.
And people have broken it down online and said, like, well, this is chair. This is right. the thing. This part is chair. This part is pilot. And that kind of helped a little bit because I was like, what is this? Some kind of weird elephant?
Right.
And then they've also, I'm sure you've seen this, but they've rendered what it may have looked like mm-hmm. As well. Because I was Googling last night, was the space jockey human?
Right.
And the space jockey was not human.
Oh, so you haven't seen Prometheus.
Oh, shit. You know what? I saw Prometheus. And I was probably super high in the movie and like got a bunch of great eye candy. But that movie, I must admit, did fly over my head. And the whole alien canon, uh-huh. I don't know it inside and out. So school me. What is, do they reveal who the space jockey is?
Yeah. Well.
Is it the big white thing?
Yeah.
The bald white guy?
I'm pretty sure. I mean, to be fair, this is coming from a nerd, like super nerd. It's confusing. Like the whole thing is confusing.
Because it confuses me.
Yeah. And like, I love how people have even broken down like the life cycle of a xenomorph because it's kind of weird, right? Like you have the queen that gives birth to the egg and then that gives the facehugger on the face and then that implants an egg in you and then
right.
the xenomorph comes out and it grows within like a day.
Yeah, super fast.
Uh-huh. And then I don't know if you saw this, but there were deleted scenes in this movie that were determined to be too disturbing where Ripley finds Dallas and he's still alive and he's like cocooned, which is what they do in Aliens.
I think I've heard of that, yeah.
Yeah. So there's then that part of the life cycle too.
Right.
It's confusing is what I'm saying.
It is. And I honestly, I'd have to go back and watch Prometheus again because I don't remember how that all worked together.
Oh, it's weird. I mean, it's like the unless I'm remembering it incorrectly, because it's been a long time since I've seen that one. But like the big white dudes at the beginning were the space jockey race, and then they were used to create the xenomorph, and that's sort of their bodies were used for that purpose. And that whole movie is like a search for God, so they were doing it for God, their God.
That's where you lose me.
Yeah, sorry.
This movie also has one of the great, again, in classic horror film fashion, the fateful mistake, like the one thing. And their fateful mistake, Annie, as you know, is having that goddamn last meal. What would have happened if they would have gone into cryo-freeze?
I mean, that's
is aliens
point.
In there, would it have burst through, or would it have killed it? Like, I kind of went down the alternate timeline of what would have happened then.
Well, they kind of explored that in Alien 3. That was sort of their goal, was to get it, like, it safely back within the body of someone else so they could
that
use
it. That was Alien 3?
Yeah, that's how it starts, I believe. Anyway, yeah, they were going to use the body of, I mean, it's in Aliens 2, because that douchey 80s villain, like every 80s villain is that guy, was going to get the implant Ripley and Newt with the embryo, and then freeze them and then get them back so they could get past the weapons quarantine thing.
I'm glad you're here to say this, because people yelling at me, like, Chuck, you saw Aliens. Have you seen this franchise? it's a franchise that I've seen all of the stuff, except I didn't see any of the Alien Predator movies.
Oh, yeah.
Are they good?
No, but they're fun.
Okay. But I never dived into trying to get a full understanding. Like, I saw Aliens quite a few times, but aside from Alien, I didn't see most of them a lot.
Yeah. Well, the thing I'm in the same boat. I've seen Alien and Aliens a lot. I will say that even ones that I don't necessarily like, I think most of them have some really interesting things that they tried and messaging. But that, I've never really considered that idea, Chuck, of like what would have happened if they'd gone to cryo.
Well, your movie's over.
I know, your movie's over. Unless you want to get into like a really boring.
Right.
Exactly. But I mean, that is one thing that I think horror movies, it for me at least, is that thought experiment aspect of, well, honestly, if they had listened to Ripley, maybe this whole thing could have been avoided, but they didn't.
Sure.
So now, as an audience, you have to decide of like, well, is it worth all of them dying just so this creature doesn't get back to Earth?
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's the first fateful mistake, actually, before the meal, is they didn't listen to Ripley.
Yep.
That's the first one. There were a couple of them.
There were a lot of mistakes in this. A lot of mistakes were made.
A lot of errors in judgment.
Yes.
Let's talk about the Brett, Harry Dean Stanton, goes for Jones scene. And again, a masterclass in tension building and false... not red herrings, but whatever you call it, where you, and there's like two or three shots where you're like, this is where he's going to get it.
Yep.
And it's not.
Mm-hmm. Because again, I saw this pretty late, and I of course was aware of the chest burster scene. Mm-hmm. I'd seen Spaceballs. Like, I knew what was going to happen. It's still really messed up and disturbing, but I was like, okay, I'm okay with this. That was the first scene where I was like clutching onto my friend and feeling that like legitimate, because the whole thing has been tense, but this was the part where I was like, oh no. Because you got those chains moving slowly.
Oh yeah.
The
water. Sound design there is so great.
Yeah.
Yeah. When he's looking up in that's such a beautiful shot. I mean, it's very Blade Runner-esque with that light and the water, just, you know, it's such a welcome thing on his face.
Yes.
And, Harry Dean Stanton is such a great actor and has got such a great mug. Mm-hmm. It was just, I mean, the casting in this movie is ridiculous, but yeah, I kept thinking even last night, because it had been a minute since I'd seen it. And I was like, wait, when does he get it?
It's still pretty, because I've seen it a lot, and I think they do a really good job with, because there's a couple of scenes where the alien is there. Like, you can right. see it, but it's uh-huh. not until it, like, starts moving.
Well, at the very end. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
That's the big one.
And
that hand
like
spills out.
Napping in there.
I know. It's like, I'm just going to, I've had a lot.
That's been a
hard
busy
day killing people.
It's my first day. But that is the scene with Harry Dean Stanton is the first reveal of
yeah.
what it looks like since it's
after it'd grown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ooh, man.
It's just dripping. And it's
amazing.
Like, mouth is twitching.
Yeah. Well, and just the design of the mouth opening and then the other little mouth in there. I mean, come on. That's movie history.
Yeah.
How brilliant is that? It's like, let's take something scary.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you needed is that alien.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to put that punch mouth in there. Does that have a name? It probably does.
It probably does.
I'm sure alien.
I usually
nerds,
just call
I've
it like.
I've called it something.
The penis mouth. The penis the tongue.
There we go. Penis tongue. yeah. I mean, that it is certainly phallic and terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because it happens so fast. And I think you live after it happens even. I don't think it immediately kills when that happens.
No.
Which is pretty terrifying.
Yeah. And then it kind of like drags him up. And
mm-hmm.
I was thinking about this last night, too, of you're never really quite sure, especially since they deleted that scene with Dallas, is the alien eating them? Is it just killing them? Because then you see the bodies of, like, Lambert and Parker, and it doesn't
right.
look like they were eaten, just killed.
Yeah, I mean, that offers the question, then, why is it killing?
The perfect organism, as Ash says, perfect killer.
Right.
But that, I mean, that is terrifying. Both options are terrifying. But if
right.
it's just killing you, and honestly, I mean, maybe some, it's just so much more powerful and threatening than, like, the humans on that ship.
Yeah.
That it feels like overkill, perhaps. But that's
well, just, they don't even have weapons, really.
Yeah.
I mean, they fashion these incinerators as flamethrowers.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, aliens is when they bring in military and weaponry and stuff like that. But I think that was one of the brilliant things about this is to make it some blue-collar workers who aren't skilled fighters. I guess, you know,
mm-hmm.
Yaphet Kotto he's kind of the only tough guy in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But not your typical tropey. It avoids so many tropes.
It does. And every phase of that creature is terrifying. Like the face hugger
mm-hmm.
is terrifying. And
I have written on my list here, Annie, in the first scene, face hugger jumps from egg. Jesus fucking Christ. That was such a terrifying moment.
Yeah. And that, like, it happened again. It happened so fast. And then there's that, like, screeching, like, sound that you're assuming it may, like, when it jumps and breaks the glass of poor Kane.
The one kind of funny part that I laughed at every time is after the chest burst, when the alien comes out and, you know, oh god, that's still going on.
Uh-huh.
And then it rides away on a Segway, it looks like. She goes
yeah.
It's like, all right, that's the only thing that kind of looks like a hand puppet.
I'm pretty sure they struggled a lot with that scene.
I'm sure, because that's why I didn't think it had legs later on.
Right.
Was because it's kind of gliding around. Maybe it didn't have legs at that point.
It definitely looks like the tail is really long when mm-hmm. you first see it, and it kind of unfurls, and the way it moves feels much more, reptilian.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. That makes sense to me.
Speaking of tropes, I also think that if this movie had been made 10 years later, this movie in 1989, 1,000% has a love story attached to it.
Yes.
Ripley in Dallas or whatever.
Yeah.
It didn't need it. Thank God it didn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
But I could totally see, I don't know if Ridley Scott would have done it, but let's say this thing goes in a turnaround and gets in the hands of, you know, some lesser filmmaker in the 80s. It's got a love story in there.
Absolutely. You can't have a main female lead and not have the romance.
Right.
It would have looked very different if it had been made in the 80s.
Yeah. Well, when was Aliens? What year was that? It was quite a few years later,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think it was like 1980, like late 80s, I think. I could be wrong. Right. But it was. It has to have been the 80s because this movie came out in 1979. But yeah.
But I think it was, let me look here, 86. So 7 years later, I mean, I'm not sure about the development of that movie. But, you know, I did love it. James Cameron, he took it in the direction it was going to go. I remember being really glad when Ridley Scott came back. And I remember having super high hopes for Prometheus and just leaving, kind of going, well, that looked awesome. And I'm kind of confused.
I think I left with a similar, my friends are like, Annie, stop talking about how that movie was about abortion. I'm like, but it was. I did really enjoy Aliens, but you will notice it does have a love story. It does have an arc in there.
It does. Yeah. Who's the villain in this movie? Is it Ash?
I think it's Ash, but it's also, what is it, Weyland Yutani Corps? I think it's the company that is like,
interesting.
Yeah, you know, priority one, capture organism, priority two, crew is expendable.
Like, right. That's the big reveal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the evil corporate overlords.
I think so, because Ash was, as much as I dislike him, he was an android doing what he was programmed to do.
Android's gonna android, you know.
And alien's gonna alien.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. But there were, I bet, a bunch of rich white guys behind that corporation.
Yes.
Making choices.
Yes.
I never really thought about that.
Pierce Brosnan played? Anyway, that was in the newest one, Covenant, I think. Was that guy being like, yes.
I don't know if I even saw that, to be honest.
That's fine.
Alien Covenant?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm getting this in the Terminator franchise confused because I think they have a similar path,
right?
Including James Cameron, but they both sort of went really far in one direction, and the backstory or the interweaving of the canon got too confusing for me in both cases.
Yeah, I would agree. I haven't seen all the Terminators. I believe I've seen all of the Alien franchise, which I did want to put in here. I think it's impressive that for a rated R movie, this movie did so well that it had like toys and comics, which is kind of mind blowing when you think about it.
It really is.
Yeah.
A rated R horror movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess they had Freddy Krueger dolls maybe or action figures, but yeah, it's not normal.
No, especially 1979. Get a xenomorph toy into that kid's hands. Give him a face.
Happy birthday, Annie. I'm gonna buy you an Ash action figure,
and I will
send it to
burn
you just so you can, just so you can melt it like in the movie, melt its face. Ugh. That was a cool scene.
Yeah, Ian Holm did a great job. It's freaky. It's freaky.
I know, and he's one of those guys that after you see that movie, regardless of what he's done, you're kind of like, it's sort of like the Hannibal Lecter effect a little bit. It's hard to go back.
Right. And that reveal is so freaky, too, where Ripley is having this realization like, oh, fuck, the company wants us dead. Like, they don't care if we die. Right. And then the camera kind of moves and he's like, there's a logical explanation for this, you know?
Like, yeah, that's a total horror movie shot.
Yes.
Now, she knew that he was an android, though, right? She didn't?
Nobody knew.
Nobody knew?
Nobody knew.
See, I thought Dallas and Ripley knew maybe.
No, because she confronts Dallas and is like, since when does the science officer get to do this? And Dallas is kind of like, oh, I'm tired. I just want... Like, I
know. He's a little over it.
Yeah, he's like, that's not my job. I don't care. And she's like, I don't trust Ash. and have you worked with him before? And he said, no. This is my first time. I had a previous science officer. This is my first time with him.
Huh. All right. I forgot about that part. Maybe I thought Dallas was
in on it?
No, not. I guess he would have been, though, if he would have been keeping that secret, right? He wasn't in on it.
No.
Of course not.
Oh, no, 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 no.
I'm reading too much into it.
Yeah, Chuck, get out of your own head.
Seriously.
That's the conspiracy theory that Dallas was behind the whole thing.
Ash really is the villain for a moment, though, in that sort of series of sequences. You forget about an alien for a minute.
Yeah, which I think is really impressive. I think that, there's nothing about him really physically that is terrifying or scary. There's plenty of scenes throughout where you, at least for me, I was like, okay, the way he's defending this creature over and over, and he's talking about how it's a perfect organism. Mm-hmm. And when he says, he calls the chest burster Cain's son, which was a biblical reference Abel and Cain, and the fact that they were born outside of God's rules, so they are quite monstrous.
Right.
So there's like instances where he's creepy and you think he has a really intense look about him.
Mm-hmm.
But in that scene, yeah, you forget that there's this impending alien threat, and you're just so focused on, oh my gosh, this is a new problem.
Well, and it's a very much a first things first situation.
Right.
That alien doesn't matter right then, because he's a genuine threat and is trying to kill her dead.
Yeah. Yeah. And then just to see him have that moment where he is like coming apart at the seams, spinning around, and there's that sound.
Oh my God, it's so great.
Yeah. And like the insides, they use like caviar and milk the lights and noodles.
A lot of food products going on. Mm-hmm. I definitely thought there were some oysters involved on the underbelly of the facehugger.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's like liver.
I was like, that's got to be an oyster or something. Some sweetbreads.
Yes.
Ew.
So gross looking. I guess what my point was, I think that it is a testament to the acting and writing and shooting of that whole thing that someone who isn't on paper that physically threatening is suddenly terrifying.
Yeah. Little Ian Holm. Mm-hmm. I mean, you get the sense even before Aliens Ripley that this Ripley could kind of kick his ass.
Right. Right.
And he's tossing her around in that 79 way that it's not, there's no wire work. There's no Sigourney Weaver. I mean, that's a good piece of physical acting, actually, if you kind of, just look at her.
Yeah.
Throwing herself around, obviously, because Ian Holm's not doing it.
Right.
such a terrifying sequence, though. And one of the great villains, I think, and one of the great reveals. I do love how when she does have the head separated and she rewires them to try and get information or whatever, how she's getting pissed off. And then she has the power then to just say, fuck you.
Yeah.
You're unplugged again, dude.
Yeah.
And how quickly, and you can tell the satisfaction she gets out of shutting him back down.
Yo, yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty great.
Well, and he has that like really creepy final smile where he's like, good luck.
Yeah. I know. And that's what sends her over the top.
Yeah.
And, to look at it from the feminist perspective, she's in charge then.
Mm-hmm.
And she, she can tell that she can put a sock in that guy.
Yeah.
Metaphorically,
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, just that whole like when Dallas, I forgot that he asked Mother and he's like, what are my chances?
Yeah.
And she's kind of like, not good, bro. Right.
That was a great mother. That's good.
Yeah. Thank you. But for that through line to continue with Ash and to have, because you would sort of think he's just a malfunctioning android, but that smile makes you think, he's happy that of what's going to become of you, of what he thinks you have no chance to defend. And then Ripley's like, fuck you.
Yeah. I mean, what is that? Because he's showing emotion there.
Yeah.
And delight in their demise.
Delight in their demise.
You know?
That's It's addressed briefly in Aliens, where Bishop is like, "Oh, that model had weird, legacy."
Yeah. Yeah, they always do that,
right?
Oh well, we forgot the Model T, whatever the T2000.
Exactly. That old Model T had a lot of issues.
Jones.
Yes.
Annie, I love cats.
Okay.
I love dogs. Mm-hmm. I'm an animal lover, and I will go out of my way to save an insect.
Uh-huh.
And last night I was going, fuck that cat. Get out of there, man. Get out of there. Who cares about Jonesy? And I felt myself betrayed. I looked over, my cat was like staring at me on the couch, and I felt terrible for betraying my love of animals, but it's like, just get out of there. Jonesy was the problem at the end.
That's the conspiracy theory, that Jonesy was behind this, because Jonesy was also behind Henry Dean Stanton, his demise.
Right. That's right. He was going to look after or look for Jonesy.
The interesting thing about Jonesy, because a lot of people do feel that way, especially when it's like, yeah, down to the wire, the lights are going wild. You've got the ringing, the blaring of the alarm, the aliens there. And Ripley's
another effective,
like,
sound design, yeah.
Oh, so good. I actually, a couple years ago, actually way longer than that, but I was in London and they had this exhibit called Movium, and mm-hmm. they had that set piece, and you could walk through it with like the fog going and the alarm going. And then
oh, no,
the
thank you.
Alien would come out at the end. It was awesome, Chuck. It was awesome, but terrifying.
Oh, I bet. No, that's cool.
Very terrifying. But yeah, she's like, kind of keeps going back for this cat, and you're, what is going on? Some people think that is a key element to a non-threatening final girl, is that there has to be something feminine and mothering about her.
Okay.
So some people think that was their effort to be like, yes, she's been pretty like gender neutral throughout,
mm-hmm.
but she still has this really strong protective mothering instinct. And she's going to save this cat.
Which is a good thing, right?
Yeah, well.
Or should she be cold-blooded and leave?
You can't win. That's the thing about being a lady, is you can't win. Because either you're cold-blooded. Like the whole quarantine thing where they're acting like, oh, you're being ridiculous. I guarantee you if Dallas had been like, nope, they would have been like, oh, okay.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No one would have questioned Dallas.
Yeah, but that whole, like, the end sequence is, there's several markers of that, of like, she has to go save the cat. That final mm-hmm. shot of her, she's like in this virginal white of, you know, the mother being presented. And there,
like when she strips down to the t-shirt, you mean?
No, when she's in the, like the final, when she's in the pod.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, they're just these like little things that they were putting in, like, yeah, she's still, don't worry, she's still a gender-conforming lady.
Yeah, and you know, the end when she does strip down to the, frankly, the strangest underwear I've ever seen.
Yes.
And the and the little tank top or whatever, it somehow to me still didn't feel like this gratuitous let me sexualize this person thing. It felt very real to me that she would do that and get in her cryosleep attire,
yep.
Which is not much. But it didn't feel, I feel like later on, if it would have been made later by a different filmmaker, they would have highly sexualized that stuff.
Yes. Yes.
Is that your read?
Yes. I think I totally agree with you. I think like if I had had a real rough day and I was about to go in cryo, that is what I would do.
Right.
But I think the complication is women have been sexualized so long that
right.
it's hard to take that away.
Yeah, yeah.
So even if I agree, like I don't feel like it's super sexual or anything like that, but because there is this history, especially when we're talking about film, of that, it's hard mm-hmm. to remove it. And
right.
yeah, that kind of, some people are like, did that have to be in there? And I see that criticism, but I also agree, like,
right.
yes, you would, in theory, that's what you would do.
Right. But, well, and especially when you factor in how that's received by probably a lot of men, I'm sure there are and were plenty of dudes. They were like, oh, man, at the end, when she gets down to her underwear,
mm-hmm.
best part of the movie, bro.
Yeah.
And I just didn't take it that way. But yeah, that's a totally fair take, I think.
Yeah, it's complicated for sure. But to me, it does feel pretty natural of like, yeah, it's been a long day.
You'd see me in a pair of me undies and my big beer gut, and that'd be it. Again, not sexual. Nothing sexual about that. Well, let's talk about that end. I mean, you mentioned the, we talked just for a second about that sound design, but that's another great example, along with the earlier sound design, of creating this tension and that siren going off and, you know, the ship will self-destruct in 4.5 minutes. And it's just like relentless. And it's one of the best movie endings in history, I think, because there are a couple of times when you're like, she did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and but it ain't over yet. And when she sees that hand flop out, there's so many emotions going on as a viewer. Part of it is like, fuck, here we go again. Part of it is worry for her. Mm-hmm. Part of it is terror again, because you see how scared she is. But she's clearly caught the xenomorph at a resting.
Yeah.
Like, because it doesn't come right out and go after her. And slipping into that spacesuit, and like she immediately kind of comes up with a plan.
Yeah. A good
thinking
plan.
Quick on her feet. Yeah. Yeah, a really good plan. She's always one step ahead, I think.
Yeah. I, as you know, I love horror movies. And I think this is a really good example, an early example of kind of what I call the fake out horror movie ending of like, release of tension. It's over. We've done it. And then it's not. And you do have a pretty long moment of thinking, like, you're calming down, but you're like, why is the movie still going if
I just have 15 minutes left?
Yeah, exactly. Like, wait.
What's happening here?
But there's a pretty long beat before they reveal that, yes, the alien is on here. And that shot is so great because you do think, oh, it's moving towards her, but then it's revealed that it hasn't quite become aware of her yet.
Right.
But you have that worry in the back of your head of, like, well, now that ship is gone. She has no other option. She's trapped in this small space with this rather large, very dangerous predator. And for her to think of that in that level of fear, to kind of be still and just do what she has to do and succeed. And then you've got it like hanging out the airlock.
I know that one final little thing too, and then she hits the blaster.
Yeah, yeah,
because you got the afterburner. Yeah, that was pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Why does she wait so long to open the door? I know at first I think she was waiting for it to fully unfurl and get out of that space, but it seems like she waited, and maybe the answer is just for a more badass ending, for it to rush at her and her hit it, but. Last night, after it completely got out, I was just like, hit the door. Hit it now. And she waited. And I mean, it's probably just all about tension building.
It definitely built up the tension. I feel like there's a couple of things going on when I watch it where I think there's a part of her that's waiting for this like perfect moment. Because she does shoot it with the harpoon, too.
Oh, that's true.
To get
forgot like, about that.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Make sure she gets it out there.
Because it's hanging on for a sec.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's that, like, waiting for the moment to do it, but also knowing, like, it's a really dangerous predator and, like, any sudden movement might trigger it to attack. Right. So I feel like she was, maybe some of it was fear. I think a lot of it was waiting for the right moment.
Because she didn't want to fuck it up.
Right.
That was her only chance.
That's one
chance. And it also... maybe it was all about just getting that one iconic shot.
Yeah.
With her in the space helmet looking, you know.
So good.
Right beyond her field of vision there.
Yeah.
Just cinema history, you know. It's amazing.
Absolutely. I love that shot. I can't remember, but I'm pretty sure Sigourney Weaver ad-libbed or improv'd that song. And they liked it so much, they kept it in, but they had to pay the royalties for that song.
Yeah. I'm sure they found a little money in the budget.
I think they were fine.
I caught one, and I meant to look this up. I'm sure it's addressed online as a goof. But when Mother is counting down, it says 27 after 20. Did you notice that?
I did not notice that.
It's like 27, 26, 25, 24, 23, 21, 20, 27. No, 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 it goes 22, 27, 21. Or it's somewhere, it's either in between 21 and 20 or 21 and 22. She says 27 again. I was like, what? And I rewound it twice and she does.
I wonder.
I'm sure someone has said something about that. I can't be.
This is one of my favorite things, though, of like people who love movies.
Right.
Is, I know. Is, I
it's
bet
like, who
you.
Cares?
Well, no, I bet you there is an explanation someone's come up with of like, well, I bet, you know, mother was saying, because the ship is 426, so if 27 is if they can get outside the ship. You know, like there's a fan explanation. And this is one of my favorite things about Star Wars that gets so messy, is people will be like, it's weird that Princess Leia has this accent. Why does she have this accent? And we're all like, oh, it's just, you know, whatever. And then Disney is like, oh, it's a core accent, because she's like, they'll come up with an explanation. I guarantee you, Chuck, there is, it was probably a mistake, but there is an explanation out there.
I'm going to find, and I might have to cue it up again just to make sure that I wasn't hearing things for like a third time, but.
Maybe she was really just fucking with Ripley.
She's like, maybe.
Because she was so close. She's right down to the wire. And she's like, mother, are the coolants back in? And she's like, too late. And she's Ripley's like, you bitch.
Yeah, it should have, she Ripley should have said, wait, 27?
Yes.
Should have been 20.
I think mother, that was all mother just having a laugh.
By the way, the Giger bar is in Switzerland. And just Google image a picture of that bar and I'll meet you there in a couple of years. We'll figure out a Movie Crush field trip.
Yes, get it.
It looks pretty amazing. I mean, it's literally like crawling around inside the spine of a xenomorph.
God, get it on pretty the company cool. dime, Chuck.
Yeah, sure. Guys, we want to do a special episode from the Giger bar. Cool. Should cost us like 10 grand.
Yeah, but it'll be that like 1.5 hours of content. Killer. So right, good.
Well, sign me up. Yes. Well, you got anything else, Annie?
I have a million quotes, but if you want to hear them, because I feel like I've made my point. I did go through all of them on Stuff Mom Never Told You.
Well, when was that released? Like, what was the title of that episode? People should definitely listen to that.
It was released in October 2019 because it was the 40th anniversary.
Okay.
This is the second time I've watched this movie for research. And it was called Feminist Movie Friday. Alien with all, like, 3 exclamation points. And then the description was, Annie finally lives her dream and talks about Alien while her co-host patiently listens to her.
Oh, that's so great. I'm going to listen to that actually too for a deeper dive. I appreciate you coming on and doing this again. I hope it wasn't a retread for you.
Oh, no, 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 no. I loved it. I was really thrilled when that was the one you chose. And we went over different topics. Last time I was much more talking about abortion and sex and stuff like that. So it's a little different.
Well, that may have scared me, so.
It's disturbing.
Annie, my mom's calling me. I got to go.
Oh, you're
going upstairs now. Well, this is fantastic. It's always great to see you. And you're one of my favorite cast members for Movie Crush. And, you know, we'll do it again in a couple of months or so.
Yes. I love being here every time. And don't forget, we have to do Return of the Jedi. I'm ready.
Yeah, yeah. I'll hit Holly up and we'll get you both back in here. I'm ready too.
Yes.
All right. Thanks, Annie.
Thank you.
Movie Crush is produced and written by Charles Bryant and Noel Brown, edited and engineered by Seth Nicholas Johnson, and scored by Noel Brown here in our home studio at Ponce City Market, Atlanta, Georgia, for iHeartRadio.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.